Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Oh my God. Where am I? My brain has somehow split in two. My work life and my home life have become two separate entities.
Well,
and all the walls are so white. I work at Lumen and I'm in Severance. Anyway, this is the HBO Boys. That was my character, guy who works at Lumen. Welcome to season two of Severance. We're here to talk about episode one. Hello, Miss Cobell. I'm Ryan. And with me is Adam.
I'm here. And it's funny, you sounded like Keanu Reeves, and we did get a Keanu cameo. Whoa. in this episode. He was the voice of the building.
He was the voice of a building.
I love that.
We're going to get a lot more fun facts about this show, the show that I posit from its first seasons, the best one on television, and we'll see if it holds up. Coming up here on with this show.
Where are you going?
I don't know, man. I never know.
Well, long awaited return of Severance. You waited, what, 3 years?
So, yeah, I mean, okay, we got Covey.
Yeah.
We got writer strike.
Sure.
We got turmoil with the writing or creative staff of the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which every time Adam Scott and Ben Stiller talk about it, they just go like, yeah, some bumps in the road. You're like, sure. Okay, your creatives, some of the creatives on the show were like, we quit. And you were like, oh, come on. Which is basically what happened.
Was there a reason for them just straight up quitting this show specifically?
It was creative differences. It was like,
was it really?
Yeah, where the show was going, they disagreed. But
interesting.
Which is why a little bit, you know, I come into season two a bit hesitant. Yeah. I don't want to, right? As I previously stated, I think this is the best show on television. And it's a lot to live up to. So I was coming into the first episode of the second season. Well, a few things. One, I was confused, generally.
Same. I needed a quick recap.
Yeah, and thankfully, they did a bit of a recap at the beginning, which I watched twice. And then also, thankfully, in the first episode of the second season, all of the characters sort of just said what happened a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know what? Normally I hate, but I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. And they set it up. Well, they set it up in a way where it made sense that they were doing so, right? Because it was the severed versions of themselves, the innies, mm-hmm. which I picture just like babies. They're just little babbers who came to work and they do a weird job, but mm-hmm. they have like the vibe of a tiny baby who's just coming to the world and doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to be a season of lies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got a humongous lie right off the bat, pretty much, from Helly. And it's just a lot of what do we think is happening kind of going on here. So, well, already, I mean, it's the first episode. Do we know how many episodes this season is going to be?
No. Anyway, I'll Google that at some point when you're talking. And then,
I'll do it right now. I'm doing it right now. You keep talking.
Oh, perfect. So we come into this episode and Adam Scott's innie is running around the office looking for something. And right off the bat, you have to ask yourself, like, okay, at the end of season one, all of the outies or all the innies are on the outside, but they're the same person. That's the part that I have to keep reminding myself of.
Yeah.
It's the same physical form.
Yes.
There are not two versions that we know of these people.
Oh boy. That would be, well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into like the theory crafting at the end of like actually what's going on, because I think they said a lot more in this episode than they have ever before of
sure
or let on what is actually going on here and what this job actually, like, what it entails, what they're doing. But as we come in, Adam Scott's innie is running around, and you get past the first part of it, which is like, okay, so he's back at Lumen. That's interesting. I wonder how they'll cover that. But this first scene of him running around, like, it feels like a lot of oneers, perhaps a few oneers stitched together or just all together. And the camera work is insane.
Ooh. Yeah, I read somewhere that they used some of those like hydraulic arms that move the cameras really, really fast in one kind of motion. And man, it is effective. This was a hell of a first like 4 minutes to get into a show. And the music choice was great too, like that jazzy upbeat. Yeah, it was just wonderful opening. I hope if it wins anything, it wins for cinematography, because this was lovely.
And as it turns out, Mark's innie is looking for the office that his once thought murdered, or not murdered, well, dead wife, you know, as he learned, because he saw a picture at the end of season one being like, oh my God, the lady who... She's alive, which is, by the way, just going back very quickly. Cool way to end a first season.
Oh, dude. I was so mad.
And he walks into the room where she used to be, and it is empty. It's gone.
And it's gone.
And then Mark walks into his old office where his old coworkers are not. There are three new coworkers. And then Milchek walks in wearing a blue... shirt, a blue turtleneck, holding blue balloons, and then says, "Hey, Mark," or something to that effect. But he follows it up with, "Been a minute." And I'm like, "Oh, this guy's the best guy."
Yeah, he's great. The whole performance this episode was wonderful. He's so good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the lasting effects of the show is just how good Adam Scott is, but. Oh.
Yeah,
and the main cast, right? Like Zach Cherry, John Turturro, and Britt Lower to a lesser extent, just because of the circumstances of her character, which we'll get into. But like Tramell Tillman as Seth Milchek is incredible, and
such a good cast.
Every moment he's on screen, he steals it.
Yeah, he's got like, and there's another scene that I'm sure we'll get to, but he's just got this. Such a dialed in deadpan stare and no emotion. Like it's so well done. He's so good at it. Makes you feel very uneasy.
Mark goes with Tillman back to Tillman's now office. It's not Miss Cobell anymore. As you might recall, she was Mark's next door neighbor and at the party where he freaked out at the end of season one. So we don't know where Patricia Arquette's Miss Cobell is, and Milchek is now the manager or in charge at the very least. And Mark remembers a lot. He basically says, "Where are my coworkers? Where am I? Why am I here?" And which is good again, because those are all the things that I was thinking.
Yeah, right. We were both in a state of confusion at the beginning of this episode.
Afterwards, he goes back and meets his new coworkers, all of which seem to know him, or at the very least, like know the lore of Mark's innie. And the three actors who are his new coworkers, are great. Aaliyah Shawkat from Arrested Development and many other things is the first thing I picked up on. But she's basically fangirling over Mark's innie just on the idea that he did anything outside of the norm. That is blowing her mind. While the other two characters are a bit more straight-laced and also, you know, perhaps came from other floors in the past, there are little things like their employee of the month little placards are made out of wood, while Mark and old Cruz was made out of glass. Suggesting that they had higher level jobs. But again, Mark's just sort of sitting there wondering where his friends are, and also simultaneously wondering why he's there in the first place.
Yeah, and we find out that 5 months thereabouts have passed, and we everything think. That's happened.
It could be a complete lie, because when it said 5 months, I believed it off the bat.
Yes,
but based on the amount of lies and the fact that we do not see the outside world at all in this first episode, we truly have no idea how much time has passed, where they are, if they're even still in the same town. They might be. We have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the severed person, as soon as it's kicked off, you don't come back to consciousness until you're back in the office again. So. Yeah, you're right. Any amount of time. But we assume 5 months. That's what we're told. I think there was something. There was two things that said 5 months. Am I wrong in that? Or did I imagine that?
I mean, Milchek just says 5 months.
He just says 5 months. Yeah, I don't trust him for a freaking second.
Well, yeah, obviously. We shouldn't trust any of these people. So
watch him be the most truthful person.
I know. That'd be nice. And then they meet Miss Wong, who is a child, and their manager. And this is the part where I think this show just separates itself from others, where my biggest gripe with so many shows is that characters do things that are illogical and antithetical to their own needs and wants. And like, it doesn't make sense that they would do these things if they're trying to get to specific places that they've made very clear that they're trying to get to.
Yeah.
And this show does a very good job of all the characters are like, why are you a child? What is happening? Like, at least saying out loud exactly what I was also thinking, which is, why is this girl a child?
Yeah. And you know, there's some thoughts onto who she could be. There's a lot of theories that I've seen in reading up about this episode, and I don't know yet.
Obviously, Mark is now sort of in the underground. Like, he's sort of, he thinks of himself in the first meeting with his three new coworkers plus Miss Wong, of him as sort of a double agent. He doesn't know exactly what his main goal is at this point, other than finding his wife and where she might be. But this scene where they're passing the ball around and he, in an unhinged but smiling way, is like, I'm just so glad I found three or four new friends.
Yeah.
And then Miss Wong was like, I must remind you that I'm actually a superior and not your friend. And then he goes, after a long pause, three new friends.
Now, that was the scene I was talking about the really, really good, just like deadpan stare, very awkward moment. And boy, do I love it. And Adam Scott, just as effective. And so is the girl that's playing Miss Wong. She's also really great.
And then the episode gets sort of turned on its head because Mark's Innie writes a note and then puts said note into one of his new co-worker's pockets. He goes into the elevator, turns and then turns back. We just sort of see him go in, go out. So we don't see the outside world at all.
Yeah.
And immediately Milchek is like, you didn't even hide your handwriting. This is obviously yours. Mark is like, what? You're crazy. But it was pretty obvious that Mark did this, trying to get a note into the outside world, at which point Mark, it kind of pops off on Milchek. It's like, yeah, I don't care. Where are my friends? What is happening?
Yeah.
And again, kind of, spot on, exactly what I'm still thinking.
Of course. And the diversion of the break room was great too, because Milchek in his inquisitive nature has to check out everything.
It's at that point that Mark runs to Milchek's office. By the way, the blue on the office wall is the same as Milchek's turtleneck, the same as the balloons. This blue Love comes it. Back pretty often. And he is talking to quote unquote corporate, or like the higher ups, through the radio that Cobell has used in the past, Milchek has used in the past. We don't know who these higher ups quote unquote are, if they're real people, if they're AI, if they're anything. We don't know. But he's screaming at them to basically be like, you know, shouting his case. At which point Milchek unplugs it from the wall and brings Mark down to a level. We don't know what's about to happen, whether it be punishment or not. Here's the thing, though. And my main takeaway from this next scene where, like, Mark just follows Milchek down an elevator. My entire time, I'm like, why is he just following? Like, why doesn't he just dead weight on the ground? Why does there are just moments where he becomes subservient that defy logic? But at the same time, I have to remind myself, like, he has a chip in his brain.
Yeah, he's curious, you know. I think that's why. I mean, I think I might do the same thing, because he didn't lead on that there was anything wrong. He's just like, follow me. And am I getting fired? You know, go back up the elevator, and he becomes severed again, and we're on a completely different floor now.
Right. By the way, we skipped it, but at some point there, when Mark was actually in the old office that his wife, who's dead and who's not there anymore, there was someone in the hallway.
Oh, yes, that's right. The very beginning scene.
And was that her? We don't know who was in the hallway, but if it was like the main security guy, people thought it was the main security guy from last season who got clubbed in the head and murdered, which would be indicative of, you know, something if that was the case. And then
I just assumed it was Milchek, which I think that they wanted us to assume it was Milchek. But you're right. I never even like thought about that after I saw it.
And then after seeing a very creepy mural of, I'm now struggling to recall who the old boss is. This is going to become important, so I need to look this up.
Yeah.
It's Keir. Keir is the late founder of Lumen Industries, worshipped by Lumen employees like as a godlike figure. Yeah, he's in the mural, and he is... has like a sword in his hands and is bestowing light upon four individuals who have a slight resemblance to our four main characters. But at that moment, Mark turns around and Zach Cherry's character, Dylan George, is now back.
Mm.
And that, again, even more questions. Like, I don't...
He didn't even get back to the outside world. He was the one... holding the buttons down at the end of the first season. So yeah, he that's very curious.
But he remembers what happened, or at least he remembers what his any would remember if allowed to keep his thoughts and memories.
Sure.
Then John Turturro's Irving Bailiff is there. He is distraught. He, as we might recall, just found out that Christopher Walken's character, Burt Goodman, on the outside is in like a relationship, so he doesn't have a shot, he now believes. And this is one of those things where I previously mentioned, like, these innies have the like emotional maturity emotional immaturity, right? Of like a little baby. And
yeah, kind of.
And they have a harder time dealing with really heavy subjects. And Irving is going through it about not being able to be with Christopher Walken's character, perhaps on the inside or the outside.
That's also a weird thing about the show that makes you think about, like, imagine just one day you have no memory of where you came from, but you know how to talk, you know how to type, you know how to write, you know how to think properly and have...
You're a baby with motor functions.
Right, that's so strange.
And then Heli comes through the elevator and immediately is weird.
Yeah, oh, from the very get-go.
And we can, I guess, just slow down here very quickly.
Sure.
And just put this assumption out there as we continue to talk. This ain't Heli, yo.
No, it's either Heli or it's her Audi intentionally in there. I think that's what I'm thinking.
It's Heli Cobell. Like, I think this is just the Audi version of herself that we've seen time and time again. That is like the, I don't know if it's CEO or like pending CEO of Lumen.
She's the family heir of it. She's an Egan.
Right, exactly. And so she, I think, is on the inside. Yeah. But I was wondering, like, does Milchek know that?
I don't know. I mean, he was down there, and he's an unsevered man. Made that very clear this episode. So if he's down there, you know.
We think he's an unsevered man. Again, there are so many... True. There that's are true. So many lies being told to both the characters and that's the audience true. Simultaneously. And
it's a bummer because like what could you, they dropped that so subtly. He just said, as an unsevered man, I'll live with that for the rest of my life. Like, did he have, he didn't have to say that. He chose to say that.
Then they're all taken to a room and Milchek is standing there and shows them a video called Lumen is Listening, which is a claymation propaganda film that is buck wild.
It is buck wild.
In this film, Keanu Reeves is the Lumen building. We also learned that the Lumen building was built on top of Keir's original house.
Yeah.
So a house that we probably saw in the first season and thought it was a recreation of a house might just be the actual house like the Keir was in way back when in the 1930s.
That makes sense. It makes sense.
We're being told that this is a video that is being showed to every new innie as they come in to work at Lumen, which I highly doubt. But yeah, also lies. What this video shows is that there are moments that are recorded. Like there's a moment that Irving said where we didn't know anyone was listening or watching that is just now recreated in this video. So it's very clear at any given moment they are actively being watched and recorded.
Yeah, Lumen is listening, you know?
I want to point out the colors in this scene.
Yeah.
The walls, very blue. The tone of it all is the blue of Milchek's turtleneck again. But also, like, the projector being used is like a blue, red, and green.
Yeah, it's an old RGB, like proper RGB projector.
It's just, there are so many cool choices being made.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of all the time in this show, both visually and narratively. But, and like, it gets passed over because of how dense the story is. But this show looks amazing, man. And
it really does.
The music is perfect. And it's just,
I love the, like, the little theme song jingle that they have kind of peppered throughout it. It's like that. It gives you a little bit of intrigue. It really is amazing how much music can change the tone.
By the way, in this film as well, Lumen's Listening, or Matters, whatever, Sarah Sherman from SNL plays the water tower. That's fun. But
oh, I didn't know that.
This also shows that Mark and Helly had a bit of a romance to the surprise of their other employee friends.
What the shit?
Yeah, right, exactly. And yeah, again, but although, like, if I'm being honest, me during this scene was mainly going, is that Keanu Reeves?
Yeah. That was like the first thing I heard. I'm like, okay. It's either Shadow from Sonic, Johnny Silverhand from Cyberpunk 2077, or Keanu, who are all in one the same.
It is at this point where all four of them, once Milchek and Huang leave, just sort of turn around to each other and say what's happening. And Zach makes it clear, or Zach Cherry's character Dylan makes it clear, like, he's just mad at Milchek about the belt thing.
Mm-hmm.
Irving tells everybody about Bert. They go over, like, what happened on the outside. And then Mark says, you know, he went to a party. His brother-in-law is the famous author they thought was famous, but isn't. It's just his brother-in-law. Again, you know, Dylan's story isn't that elaborate because he was inside the whole time and really didn't get to see the outside, which is going to come up again because he's a bit more malleable when Milchek tries to sell him something very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Helly is asked what she did on the outside, and the innies don't know this, but the audience does, is that she's lying. And this is the moment where you're like, you ain't Helly, dude.
Either that, or, you know, another theory I read was that she's just embarrassed to admit to the team that she is an Egan. So I don't know what to believe here. I want to believe that she's embarrassed and it's actually her, but I don't believe that that's actually true.
Yeah, no, I think she's a, I mean, also in this video, they're all hailed as heroes.
Right.
From Aaliyah Shawkat's character's introduction to them, that is sort of how the some of the legacy innies see them as well. And so, yeah, she could, the Annie Helly, be just really embarrassed or be like a double agent and trying to figure out something deeper from Mark, Irving, and Dylan. We don't know.
And do we think now, they said 5 months have passed. Do you think in 5 months they would have been able to actually execute the reform they're talking about to this whole program across the world?
Well, no. I mean, I absolutely, 1,000,000% did not do this reform. Everything in that video was a lie. The newspaper they showed of all of these innies being in a parade is just them or their original employee photos slapped onto like the JFK car. And the name of the newspaper is like the Keir Chronicles. And it's all just very, very obviously made up. Something that, like, again, if you're a dumb little baby, you might just be like, oh, yeah, that might be the truth.
Oh, that's me. That's me in that picture. Sure.
But for us, the audience, it's just like, you know, oh, they're being lied to on a grand scale.
Yeah, I want the time frame to be like years. I would love it to be like 5 years and us get a crazy jump. And then we find out what happens between that time frame and the forthcoming episode. Because I think the next episode talks about the Audi Mark.
Yeah, we get some. I would love to get some Audi stuff just for some context.
Oh, yeah, I want it.
In the middle of this, Dylan and Irving have a conversation where Irving is basically like, I have nothing to live for and I'm going to kill myself. And Dylan is like, oh, please don't do that.
You make me better. And he is great, too. The whole cast is really firing on all cylinders here.
At this point, Milchek takes Dylan away. And when he leaves Irving, it's unclear if we're ever going to see Irving ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how Irving murders himself in the inside Lumen, but
yeah. Well, we'll see. Helly almost did it in season one.
That's true. At this point, this is when Milchek lets Dylan know his wife's name, lets his innie know some Audi stuff.
Yeah,
and obviously just trying to carry favor with his with Dylan's innie and get him on. They're also in this moment because at the end of the whole video, Milchek said, like, you guys don't have to stay. If you want to leave, you can go. It's up to you and you have to the end of the day. So sure. He's also just like convincing them one by one the amount that he would have to by person for them to stay. And this is the way, obviously, that he has convinced Dylan to stay. And he didn't have to, Milchek, that is, do anything to Irving because, you know, Dylan basically did that being like, yo, if you're not here, if you're not alive, then you have no chance of getting Bert. But like, you don't know where this road's going. You got to be here to see that road end.
He's taken a play directly from Coble's playbook here. She said something in the first season. The surest way to tame a prisoner is to let him believe he's free.
Right.
So, yeah. I call BS, dude.
Also in the middle of this, Milchek is mad that his name isn't on the computer in his office. He's slightly disgruntled that he's not seen completely. He's not being respected fully as Miss Cobell used to be. And, you know, it's at this point where everybody one by one sort of decides to stay for their own specific reasons. And Mark being like, okay, I gotta find my Audi's wife. She has to be around here somewhere. I saw her. Helly, for one of two reasons, right, that we went over previously, either she's a double agent or she's so embarrassed that she just doesn't even want to go back on the outside. Like, she's just so embarrassed by her Audi that she would give anything not to be that person.
Sure.
Irving for long-term Bert options, and Dylan because now he knows something about his Audi. He's being fed information slowly but surely, but I like exactly like you said, make him think he's free.
I love the blueprint of the Audi visitation room.
Yeah.
The family visitation room. Because that's weird.
Right. Now, and that's like, wow, you can, as you're any, you little baby brain, you can see your wife and children. Isn't that chill?
That's so weird. That's so another one of those things that I like kind of put my brain into their position and be like, that's, I don't know if I'd want to do that. That's weird.
So one by one, they all decide to stay. They sit down and they start doing their jobs again, which is looking at numbers and putting them in buckets, four different buckets. And Mark looks a little happy to be doing it. Like it's his, it's almost his calling. It's something he's good at, or at least that his innie is good at.
Sure.
And the question, or one of the major questions for a long time on this show is, okay, what are the numbers? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And I suppose we can cover that very quickly. Like, okay.
Sure.
Is this just the old school sci-fi trope of Kier, who's dead, or perhaps Kier's relatives, his son, Helly's father, who's many people think is just sick currently, and looking forward to an impending doom slash death. Are they like rebuilding consciousness to some degree? Are they bringing people back to life by rebuilding consciousness into these chips and then putting it into bodies, like somehow as I die on screen somehow is this just connected to the old sci-fi thing of rich people trying to be immortal?
I think it's rich people trying to play God, maybe not trying to be immortal only. I'm sure that's part of it, if that's what it's going to be. But I mean, this whole thing with Mark's wife and the little girl boss now, like, do you think that Mark's working on something that has to do with his wife? Maybe microdata refining his wife?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Whether it be Kier or his wife, I think they're rebuilding.
Yeah.
Something that was or is scattered, and it just only makes sense for it to be like, you know, someone's brain.
Yeah, they're refining coding into humans directly.
By the way, I just saw the initial scene with Mark running in the hallways took 5 months to shoot.
Did it really?
Isn't that wild?
What? That took 5 months to shoot? Holy moly. That's longer than I would have pegged it for.
Anyway, when we get to the end of the first episode, what did you come away with on just feelings on the episode and like vibes on the season going forward?
So this show, I really like it. I'm so bummed that I waited so long to watch season one, but also I'm kind of happy that I didn't have to wait 3 years for the second season. So yeah, I'm into it. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. If it's anything like the first one, there's going to be some cool twists and turns and maybe some swings, as we mention a lot here on the pod, that make the show different and interesting and cool. Another thing that I saw about this is completely off your question, but I'm just reading this in real time, is there was potential nod to Parks and Rec with the Ben Wyatt claymation episode with the video of the Lumen building, and I think that's amazing.
the thing that people are really drilling down into, like, if you want to, the ruiners, I call them, like, if you want to ruin this show for yourself, which I'm a part of 100%, like, I go to Reddit immediately and just read every comment and every
I try to avoid it.
There's this moment where when they're refining data only for Mark's screen, it briefly flashes an image of his Audi wife, Gemma.
That's
Miss Casey.
Sure.
And it's accompanied that screenshot of like a bunch of analytical data. And
oh boy.
Right. And it, on the screen, it says Cold Harbor. So
yes, yeah, people are like,
are they just freezing people who die Walt Disney style, inserting chips, and then people who work at Lumen who are severed are just recreating them from their consciousness from the ground? It's again, like, that's that what sort of leads to, is this just an immortality play?
Yeah, I mean, even if it was, the way that they're drawing it out and explaining it is very cool, and I like it.
Right. I mean, but is it Kier? Like, is Kier alive? Or are they, or is, like, you know, the ultimate god complex in this severed world alive? So, that, okay. So, when I got to the end of this episode, I loved it, by the way.
Yeah.
I still think this is probably one of the best shows on television. I am slightly concerned, though, that this show really worked in the first season because it really didn't have to explain itself very often.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of happened. And by the way, like, you recall from season one, the guy that Mark used to work with who said and gets murdered, says, like, you know, there are people in there who don't get to leave. So, like, we got tidbits like that. But because the first season was so dense, and because they chose to go the way of just, like, saying what happened in the first season, having the characters say it, having the innies know those things to some degree, staving off the fact that it's a confusing show if you don't pay attention to every single moment of it. It really reminds me a lot of Westworld season one in that way.
Mm, yeah, for sure.
Where you could just continue to dig if you chose to, because they buried a lot. Or yeah, you can just be a surface watcher.
Yeah, I rewatched this episode again just to, one, to refresh myself. I rewatched half of the last episode and this one. And I'm glad I did, because I like paid attention the second time a little bit more and caught the little details that I missed the first time around. And I hope they take, as you would say, a big swing. And I hope that it's something that we've never seen before, you know. I have trust in Ben Stiller with this. I think he's got something great here. And I just hope it doesn't fizzle out. I want Lumen to keep shining. See what I did there?
I do see what you did, and I'm proud of you.
It's pretty good.
It was pretty good. It's setting itself up for what we keep calling big swings, right? Doing something a little bit weird, doing something that's a little, like, you didn't see coming, because, like, why would you even do that? But somehow it works. And it just kind of is setting itself up for having to do something like that. Because as a sci-fi show gets a bit more sci-fi-y, and it will choose whether or not to explain itself on a episode-by-episode basis. The first one did so, but I think we're about to, like, get back into the what the heck is happening soup.
Yeah. And yeah, sci-fi, I went back and forth on whether or not I would consider this a sci-fi show. I think this is like a weird dark thriller or dark comedic thriller with some sci-fi elements. So I hope they don't lean into sci-fi themes. I hope they stay kind of where they're at, because sci-fi can go kind of
wild.
They
have to explain what they're doing at Lumen somehow.
Sure. Sure,
and
sure.
If it's not something based on consciousness, immortality, etc., and if it's not, then that will be weird, confusing, and perhaps the big swing that, listen, do something that's not that and have it make sense and have me be surprised. That's the best case scenario. I'm honestly fine with the whole immortality thing of it all. It's just that the more you lean into that stuff, the more you lean into, because that's just what the end of the road always was going to be, no matter what. Although we don't know about the creative differences, that perhaps we're going back and forth. And once the show's over, maybe we'll learn that about what the creative forces who left would have made season two rather than this. But if you're doing immortality stuff, then yeah, it's going to get a little weird.
And get a little sci-fi.
It's going to get sci-fi, right? It's going to, and it's just tough because if you're doing immortality stuff, That's a trope that's been done a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I'm just concerned that they're not going to do it in a way that is interesting enough to be chill. But if there is a team that can do it, it's this one. By the way, Adam Scott and Ben Stiller have a podcast now where they're talking about episode by episode of the show. And
yeah, don't listen to that. Listen to this one.
It's like, stay in your lane, guys.
You're so good at making it. Don't talk about it.
Just like make it. Leave podcasting to the semi-professionals.
Sure. Well, we have a lot more tenure on the matter than they do.
Yeah, but they do have like... I just wonder how hard it is to be like, well, we know what happened, but...
Yeah, yeah, but we can't tell you. Yeah, right. That's got to be so difficult. continuing on, we will be covering this episode to episode, week to week. Next week, episode 2, Goodbye, Mrs. Selvig, is the title name, and we'll be covering that one. And there are 10 episodes in this season.
See, we got there eventually.
Good. Yes. And it goes to all the way through March 21st, which is just wild for me to say out loud.
Sure. I mean, that's 2 months from now.
Yeah, it's just that's wild that it's already 2 months and we're almost approaching April.
Time is weird, man.
It is weird, man. It's very sci-fi.
It's not. It's just like
time is a construct. Works. Anyway, we'd like to thank our patrons. Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, Howdy Dream Cowboys, Chris Wood, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Chewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Buffalo Pizzle, C. Fritz, and Cat's Pajama 10. And we'd like to thank Brent Ginn and Butter Nichols for being our $5 a month tier patron. And you too can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/HBOBOIZ for one or more dollars a month. Get all the stuff early, ad-free, and a little exclusives, which we did record today. We recorded a Patreon exclusive. So if you're not subscribed, you're missing out on that fun, like, 10 minutes. Please also follow us on our socials at the HBO Boys Podcast or at the HBO Boys Pod. I'm on TikTok, which is still a thing for at least 90 days. Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky is there as well. Although I don't use that very much, you can still follow us and see the things I have posted.
That's not a very good advertisement for it, man.
No, yeah. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like Blue Sky, but I have it.
Don't bring it up. Stop bringing it up.
I have it. Follow us and it will be cool. And maybe I'll post more.
Oh, okay. Wow. Really putting the onus on them.
You try running four social medias.
No, I didn't. I don't want to.
I do that.
You know what's chill, dude?
What's chill?
Irving goes home and paints the same hallway over and over again.
That's terrifying. That's terrifying.
Every night for his
over and
perhaps
over.
His innie to one day remember to look down that hallway. And
yeesh.
In.
Yeah. It's giving me 51st Dates vibes.
Mm. Do you think when we see the outside world, there's going to be like protests and militarization and... Like, do you think the world is just has gone straight to fucking hell, dude?
I think if the severance reform bit that they're pandering to us is true, maybe. But if it's a cover up, no, I think it's going to be business as usual.
Yeah, because I mean, more so than anything, like, why do these four people decide to keep coming back, or do they not have a choice?
And though that will be revealed, hopefully. For the love of God, reveal it. Reveal that.
Yeah, you can reveal it if you want, but just like slowly but surely over 10 episodes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Please do. Do it on the final episode of it.
Anyway, I got to go. I got to get me a bonsai tree, dude. Pretty cool bonsai tree Milchick has there.
Have you eaten your sub yet?
No, but I'm going to dust a bonsai tree and eat a sub.
I love that.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.